Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Dave Sims, play-by-play voice of the Mariners on Root Sports and 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Doing well, Stacy. Nice to be on with you. And Jake, how's everything going with you guys?
Good. I know I missed you last time you were in. I know you and Graz and Jake had so much to talk about.
Yeah.
We were just recently seeing Kelnick, so we've had some time to watch him. Obviously, Dave, just like I'm sure you're talking about this all the time, it's my first question, what are you seeing with him? Are you seeing a guy with all the promise in the world that's just getting unlucky? Are you seeing a pattern in his approach that's making him strike out? I mean, how should me and fans be interpreting his plate appearances so far?
Well, he's not going to get fastball cookies to hit in fastball counts, and he doesn't even get them in even counts. And he's going to have to show that he can consistently hit changeups and breaking balls and sliders, to get off the snide there. I'm starting to really feel for the kid. I mean, he's up to, 0-for-30 or whatever it is. It's a bad number. It harkens back to the 1950s when Gil Hodges with the Brooklyn Dodgers was struggling, and a priest started mass one day, and he said, "Keep the commandments and pray for Gil Hodges." That's where we are with Kelnick right now. And I think he's too good an athlete, too good a hitter. And so many guys go through this. I know I've talked to Blowers about this, and I've talked to other major leaguers I know around the league, and I've read stuff over the years. I mean, come on, Willie Mays started 0-for-26. Or 0-for-16. I'm not saying he's in the same category as Willie Mays, but you just have to be patient. Yeah, there was a lot of hype about the kid, and he showed a lot in spring training, but he's playing among the with the best, and they have found an area that he's not totally efficient in right now, and they're exploiting it, and he's going to have to learn and grow, and I'm quite sure he will.
Dave, I want to focus on that word that you just used, patience, because it can be shown in a variety of different ways. Patience in the long haul of the year, and that could be patience in terms of, hey, being okay with being called up, being sent back down, and then being called up again, or just saying, hey, we're gonna keep this kid on the major league lineup. What do you think is the best thing for him as you watched the game for so many years? You had the opportunity, you referenced, talking to, some of your friends that have, colleagues that have played at the big league level. In your estimation, what do you think is the right thing to do for him over the next month, I would ask?
Well, I'm not the general manager in terms of making calls to send a guy down. I think that the belief in him is tremendous, and I think that's why he's probably still here. Because a lot of guys, if they go over 15, over 20, are long gone. So I think the fact that Jerry and his staff have tremendous and deep-rooted belief in Kelnick that he's going to break out of it at some point, and they want it to be here. And the other thing, too, it's I don't know how they feel about Julio Rodriguez. I mean, the numbers are really good and everything, but let's face it, in terms of, outfielders by trade, you got Trammell, you got Haniger, thank goodness, and you got Fraley, and those are the top three guys you have along with Kelnick, so that's four outfielders up here. And, you're not hearing about a whole bunch of, outfielders ripping it up down in the minor leagues right now. So, I mean, if he's the best guy, they're going to ride with him until he figures it out. And I just sometimes you look at a guy, I like the kid's swagger. I like his confidence. And I think right now, obviously, it's a deep struggle, and I wouldn't wish this on anybody. But Trout was sent down. There's a whole bunch of guys who were sent down in the past. I think this is a kind of special kid that they just want to ride with, and he's just going to figure it out at some point. And for fan purposes, hey, it's not pretty. But let me tell you, here's the other thing that jumps out at me. This team is 29-29. Came in with low to no expectations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And injuries up the wazoo. And they're one, as we speak now, one of seven teams in the bigs that have won seven of their last 10 games. That's pretty daggone good.
Dave, you mentioned that, and it is tremendous. It's really incredible when you really think about everything that they've overcome. What does that tell you about this team?
Well, I think it's strength of character. I think that's a big thing. And we had Fraley on after the game last night. And I think the second question I asked him, I said, I saw the reacts of your teammates and all these guys. Most of these guys are 25, 26 and younger. and how happy his teammates were for him. It wasn't just the usual, hey, man, LA, congrats. I mean, they were hugging him and everything. And it just seemed like a deep-rooted affection. Now, deep-rooted affection doesn't win a whole lot of ballgames. I tell you what, it keeps a group together, keeps them trained on, you know, a purposeful path to where they're, you know, a successful path that they're trying to get on. And that speaks volumes for, you know, for successful teams, units, and endeavors anywhere in life.
J.P. Crawford is a name I didn't hear a ton from in spring training. I think we're all focused on, obviously, Kelnick, Kyle Lewis for a while there until he was injured. And he has been taking off, in especially the last month. Do you think that, you know, it just took him a minute, or do you think that there's something that clicked for him?
Well, you know, and all these guys, you know, baseball is one of the hardest sports, you know, to achieve success. And I mean, again, your superstar failing 70% of the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's a young guy. He's a terrific athlete, runs well, he's got a great arm, can throw from any position. His dedication to fielding has been outstanding. And when we had him on post-game, I don't know, a few weeks ago, he talked about his efforts to hit the ball up the middle and the other way, and it's working. I mean, he drove the ball hard three times last night, which was a great sign. And certainly defensively, there's a lot of, you know, reason to have big confidence in the guy. I think another guy, you know, he's maturing. A lot of these guys are maturing right in front of us. You know, these will be finished products soon, but, you know, it's happening in front of our eyes right now. And again, at 29-29, I am really surprised and happy for these guys at where they are right now.
Dave, how comforting is it to have Ty France back in the lineup? And you just look at the splits and the numbers. You know, the first half before he got hurt, he was hitting like .313. During the the period of time where he was trying to play hurt, he hits .138. They finally put him on the IL. He comes back and he's hitting like well over .350 the current time. It's kind of nice to be able to point at that injury and say, okay, that was the reason for that slump.
Yeah, no question. And he's another guy. I mean, body language doesn't win a ton of ball games, but it puts you en route. And this guy, when he gets up to the plate, I mean, he's swinging that bat. He's rocking, sir. You know, he has his own little, you know, load like Kelnick does. And he just reeks of hitting. I got you covered. I got you from pole to pole, gap to gap. And, you know, I can get the barrel to the ball consistently. And, you know, how many home runs asked Blowers this last night? I mean, how many home runs did he project from this guy? And, you know, he was thinking, you know, mid-20s would be a heck of a number, but also hit for a pretty good average. So. You can understand why, you know, we've seen him in his good segments here in this season, why Jerry and his crew were very high on him when they saw the numbers and they saw him live and they made the deal to get him last year.
Dave, what have you made of the season for Justice Sheffield? He's had some highs and lows this year. Last night was certainly fun watching him sit down Ohtani three times. What have you made of his performance thus far this season?
Yeah, I really like that kid, and I was really rooting like heck for him to get, you know, six complete last night. I was really bummed that he got two outs and then walked the guy.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think I remember from when he came up in that first emergency starting there a couple of Aprils ago, and I remember talking to him the next day, and I was busting his chops. I said, dude, seriously, can you freaking breathe tomorrow? And he laughed. He says, you're right. I was nervous. I was scared. And I love talking to these guys, and He's learned a lot from Tom, being around Tom Murphy, Marco Gonzalez, obviously the coaching staff. And, you know, when we talk about these guys in the major leagues, I mean, you're talking about alpha males. We're talking about elite dudes. And, you know, they got major pride. And he wants to learn. He wants to get better. He wants to be great. And he's checking all those boxes. I mean, there's a lot to like there. The slider's been devastating. And he competes like heck. The only thing that makes me nuts is that he stops the game when guys get on base, but I can't help that.
What's it been like watching Mitch Haniger have the season he's had?
Stud. I mean, you know, valuable guy. He's an all-out every day, every at-bat, every fly ball, veteran guy who's been around. And anytime a guy has undergone the physical difficulties that he has and worked his way back to be as good, if not better, than he was prior to the injuries, big tip of the cap. I mean, that's a major props, and hopefully he's going to be here for a long time.
You know, Dave, there's been a lot of questions swirling around Kyle Seager, and he has, you know, another year in terms of an option, and everybody's speculating on his future and whatnot, but I know the average isn't necessarily as high as you'd want it to be, but in terms of RBIs, in terms of home runs, he's producing, and obviously he's been such a mainstay at that hot corner. I mean, is Kyle Seager absolutely made a stake for himself for the Mariners organization to say, hey, if you might have thought about moving on from me after this season, you may think again?
I think I'll repeat something I said earlier. I'm not hearing about any step third baseman en route or immediately in the organization. He's it, and he'll probably get ready to go. He might be in the midst of getting ready to go on another hot streak where he can carry the ball club and out of that 3-hole, 4-hole. And again, veteran guy. He and Haniger are veteran guys. Ideally, you like to have a nice mix of veterans and young kids. Well, right now, the kids are outnumbering the veteran guys. And having them around, I don't know what the boys up front are going to do, what the financial guys are going to do, what the baseball guys are going to do. But having him around next year wouldn't be a bad thing, I'll tell you, because what you're going to get at third, solid as a rock. Starts a 5-4-3 double play as well as anybody I've ever seen. I marvel every night. Been watching his entire career. I marvel every night. When he turns a double play from whatever angle he has to throw from, he hits the second baseman right in the chest and just makes it so much easier to make that turn to get the double play. And it's uncanny how accurate it is. I mean, that's putting in the work and having some talent. And I've always enjoyed my conversations with him. He's a North Carolina guy. Mm-hmm. I'm a Duke fan, having done Coach K's show for the last 16 years, so we always break chops and have a lot of laughs on that, especially in March during the playoffs. So
awesome.
I've always enjoyed being around Kyle.
Dave, we've been talking all day just following the release of that Sports Illustrated article and later an ESPN report about the league cracking down on the use of foreign substances for pitchers. Has this been something that you've been noticing kind of increasing, whether this year or in recent seasons? And just how does the league handle that? I mean, it's hard to moderate, but what are your thoughts on this?
And Mike Shield, I thought was outstanding. I saw his post game conference last week, and he's right. It's been a wink and a nod. They got to take care of it. I mean, either let it go, or totally get rid of it. And the thing that's interesting when you talk to hitters, they like the fact that, hey man, if that's something that's going to keep these guys, keeping them in control and command where the baseball is going to go. Like 99% of the time, they like that. I don't get the feeling, and from talking to people and seeing things, I don't think there are many artistes like when I was growing up in the 50s and the Gaylord Perrys and people like that who could cut it, sink it. And I don't think there's a big number of guys. I mean, obviously there are some guys that can do it, Don Sutton and people like that. I think that it's an attention grabbing matter, and baseball's got to get on it and get it fixed ASAP.
You know, that's something, it's a perspective that we haven't thought of or talked about, that actually batters might be more comfortable with it because it gives them more control, gives pitchers more control when they're throwing with such high velocity. It's pretty fascinating.
Everybody, 95, 98, or Tony's 101, 102. Dude, I want you to know where that ball's going. And who did he hit last year? Tony, he blazed that canna. Darn near hit him in the face with a 101 mile an hour pitch that eventually did plunk him on a two seam and it got away from him. Like, yo, my man, if you're going to be throwing it that hard, I want you to know where the hell it's going. And that's fair. There's nothing wrong with that.
Wow, that is a really interesting way to move the conversation. I'm excited for Jake and I to keep talking about this. I can't stop talking about it. That story coming out earlier today in Sports Illustrated. He is Dave Sims, play-by-play voice of the Mariners on Root Sports and 710 ESPN Seattle. As always, amazing stuff. So much to take from this. We're going to continue talking about it. But Dave, we have to let you go. I hear that you may have to run to the supermarket.
That got canceled. Got canceled and it was moved to a different time. So I just get my reading in, just get me to work out.
Oh, for a minute there. You too. Bye, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
For a minute there, I was ready for like a shopping with Sims or like supermarket with Sims.
Yeah.
We just follow him as he runs errands and then we all talk about baseball.
I think that would make the conversation that much better, right?
Personally.
That he's just, I would love the idea of Dave Sims just walking through this, shopping market, taking some stuff off the shelves.
We hear like the beep.
That's right.
Beep. in the background as he's checking out, or just like middle of the conversation, just Mitch Haniger is a stud. He has been fit. You know, speaking of, you guys, just while we're talking, I got to take a break. Now, do you get avocados where all of them are rock hard, or do you... Love it. Love, Dave. Good conversation. Right now, though, we're going to switch gears, go to the NFL for some NFL headlines. Jags head coach Urban Meyer has the latest on Tim Tebow, potentially, I would say, this year's comeback player of the year candidate, Jake. Early candidate. He says, he's asked what the percentage is of him making the team. Says, we don't know. This is uncharted waters. It's going to be very difficult, but he's been doing great. He's been doing great in practice. He's learning the offense, as you can imagine. He's working as hard as anybody. I see good camaraderie amongst the team and Tim. It's been good so far. I'm still not taking any of this seriously, Jake. I'm like, of course he's great in camp. You guys are throwing balls around in t-shirts and shorts. Like, everyone who has ever been an athlete in their lives at any point is going to look fine there.
Right. Notice he didn't say anything about how he's doing at the actual position. Good camaraderie. Hey, Tim being out there.
Because it was never serious.
Uncharted waters.
Because it was never a sincere effort to make him part of the team.
Until I hear that, hey, Tim Tebow's really got this down. Like, the route running is impressive. His grasp for, you know, how reliable he is catching the football. Whatever it is, I want to hear the compliments about him actually playing the position. And until I actually hear that, yeah, I agree with you. You can't take this seriously. This is an experiment. Lots of people are talking about it. It's bringing a lot of media attention. Smart on Urban Meyer. But I can't take it seriously until I actually hear positive things about him playing the actual position of tight end.
All right, we've got some news from new head coaches and one OC about franchise quarterbacks. Well, potentially a franchise quarterback and one newer quarterback. So I'll start with this one. Packers OC Nathaniel Hackett, who we were talking about as a potential OC for Seattle. Obviously, that didn't happen. He's been pleased with what he's seen from... I love it, DJ. This is how DJ wrote it. Packers OC Nathaniel Hackett has been pleased with what he's seen from future 2021 Packers starting quarterback Jordan Love. Quote, I think it's just about being able to make proper decisions and understand its timing and accuracy. All those things have definitely been better up to this point. There's so much for him to be able to learn that it's been great having him here and having the opportunity to help him out. To me, this is just offseason / preseason talk. It's just stuff to say, like, everyone looks great all the time. No one's going to say anything bad.
Right.
That said, I have not felt at any point this offseason that there is a 100% chance Aaron Rodgers is under center in 2021.
I think there is. I think there is 100%.
You think
chance.
He is not leaving Green Bay, period?
I don't think he's leaving Green Bay.
How do they fix
that? He either sits out of the season or he doesn't play
at all.
He's
not going to sit out the season.
I just don't see how they can pull off a trade where they really truly can get everything that they would want back in the value of what Aaron Rodgers brings. Your MVP of last season, I just don't see it. I really have a hard time seeing that happen. I know Aaron Rodgers is going to make it as uncomfortable as possible, but I still believe that Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback for this team. And guess what? You know what? This might be the best scenario possible. Aaron Rodgers, stay away from the facility as long as possible so we don't have to be uncomfortable walking through the hallways and wondering what you're going to be like every single day, the mood, the vibe that you're going to bring to our locker room. And instead, we get a chance to really get our quarterback of the future, Jordan Love, a ton of reps. Give him reps that he hadn't had a year ago. And as you prepare for the future, this is honestly, if Aaron Rodgers is going to be gone the following season in 2022, how this is playing out, Aaron Rodgers staying away from the Packers, it's the best thing that could happen for Jordan Love in his development thus far. Because if Aaron Rodgers is there, Jordan Love's not getting nearly the same amount of reps.
Yeah. Seahawks will be playing the Packers this year. Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni, meanwhile, has been happy with what he's seen from quarterback Jalen Hurts so far. He said he's been really impressed with him, his work ethic, his attention to detail, etc. Are you in on Jalen Hurts? Second question for both of you guys and for me. Who has a better year this season, Jalen Hurts or Carson Wentz?
Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz has a better team. I think Carson Wentz is in a better situation.
Got a better defense.
No doubt.
Sure.
And I'm rooting for Jalen Hurts. I really like him. I still think the Eagles are a mess. I still think that they have a lot to work through as an organization in terms of their roster construction. And you just hope the best that Jalen Hurts can survive through it all. But it doesn't surprise me that look, again, as we said, everything's going to be positive. Everything's going to be upbeat. But Jalen Hurts is a hard worker. He's a dedicated guy. And so I would be shocked if he didn't take this offseason seriously, didn't take this opportunity that's in front of him to go win the job outright, show his teammates, show his new head coach that he's going to get the offense down. So, but ultimately, I think that Carson Wentz is going to have a more successful season than Jalen Hurts.
Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb is channeling his inner T.O. So he's been having a bracelet with T.O.'s catchphrase, get your popcorn ready. He had 74 receptions, 935 yards last year with 5 touchdowns. Question, is he the next great wide receiver? Now, I think that the Cowboys will be better. I'm also favoring the Cowboys to win the NFC East. This is a lot to do with Dak being back and less to do with all of their weapons. As far as being the next great quarterback, I think he's certainly up there. He's got a lot of weapons, but I'm looking at Justin Jefferson in Minnesota first and maybe even A.J. Brown in Tennessee.
Mm. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you on that. But ultimately, when we're talking about, we're talking about Terry McLaurin here, right? I mean.
No, CeeDee Lamb for this one.
Oh, CeeDee Lamb. So,
we're jumping ahead to my next
I'm sorry. CeeDee Lamb, to me, is a guy that as you look at his production last year, Stacey, it was excellent. And he had some moments where he had some drop passes that he wished he could have had back. But in terms of your rookie year, very, very impressive. So I believe that he's going to continue to keep making the right steps. And I think that he's going to be a tremendous, tremendous player in this league. Is he better than Justin Jefferson? Oh, man. I don't know about that. Jefferson was great last year. But I do think that CeeDee Lamb is going to rack up a ton of yards, a ton of numbers. And he'll be very, very productive this season.
Jake spoiled my next story, so I can't even spoiler alert you guys. Washington football team wide receiver Terry McLaurin has been getting pointers from former Seahawks wide receiver Doug Baldwin. I'm going to assume he reached out to him and asked him specifically for help getting off the line, his releases off the line. Doug Baldwin was always phenomenal with that. He would make defenders look ridiculous, breaking ankles. It was always a strength of his. I don't know if it's going to be a strength of McLaurin's, but I have no issue with Doug reaching out to help him. Like I know some people were interpreting it as, oh, Doug is helping people from another team. I think if any Seahawks receiver reached out to Doug and said, hey, can you help me with this? He would do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me? I mean, obviously he's great friends with Tyler Lockett still. If DK Metcalf reached out to Doug, Doug definitely would help him. I have no doubt about that. But the reason why this connection was made is not only because they're similar in size, but they have the same agent. They have the same football agent. So smart on the agent to utilize his tree and utilize, past guys that he has represented before to help the current guy. And so I think that this is really no news if you're a Seahawks fan. If you're overreacting about Doug Baldwin helping somebody else, I mean, I think you could calm down with that. But Terry McLaurin has had a very, very impressive start to his NFL career. Obviously, if he can really master the line of scrimmage the way that Doug Baldwin was, I mean, look out, because Doug was unbelievable. I think he was the best at the line of scrimmage in the NFL when he played, especially when you go post-2015 to the time he retired, he was absolutely special.
We've been talking about MLB's crackdown on the use of foreign substances for pitchers. We just talked with Dave Sims, and if you missed it, he had something really fascinating to say. It's not changing my mind on it, but it's something I never considered. Really good insight. We'll tell you what he said next. Also coming your way is what I need to know. You can send your questions in anytime. You don't have to wait, even though we're doing that at 1:45. So you can text them in now if you want your questions for what I need to know. Mac and Jack's text line 710-710. All of that coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Some breaking news from Mike Garofolo, who retweeted, by the way, news that was broken by Mark Sanchez, not who I had tapped to be breaking NFL
former
news.
Former
quarterback Mark Sanchez, not like random NFL reporter you potentially haven't heard of. No, it's the Mark Sanchez you're thinking of. From Mark Sanchez, Michael Dixon, 4-year extension with the Seahawks, done. Punters are people, too. Someone tell Dave Wyman that. Especially a great one like Michael, LOL, and then he tags Michael Dixon. I love the LOL for the report, but this is confirmed from Mike Garofolo, who I think usually is is right. Like, I usually trust him, especially for Seahawks stuff. Four years, $14.5 million in new money, source says. Gets 10.6 in the first 2 years.
What a random breaking news. Like, from somebody of Mark Sanchez, I'm just honestly shocked.
Saw that?
It's either, like, Michael Dixon and Mark Sanchez either have the same agent or they're like random buddies or something. Like, when has Mark Sanchez become the news broker on punters? I mean, that to me is the oddest connection ever.
I would love for that to be his beat. The only news he breaks and the only contract extension he breaks is special teams players. That's it. Exclusively Mark Sanchez.
That's right. That would be just cornered the market. That would be fantastic. But this is a big time payday. If you're talking about the punter, market and Michael Dixon, I mean, 4 years four year extension. I think it's well deserved. He's been fantastic for the Seahawks. Obviously, when he got drafted, they saw him as a legitimate weapon, a player that can help them out in a big way in terms of helping out the defense and field position battle. He's been fantastic with that, and you know, I think that this is nice to have him locked up, and I wonder what that does in terms of their cap. Does it alleviate any money? Where does their cap situation sit now? But in terms of him getting guaranteed money, I mean, he just got 10.6 guaranteed up front, so that's big time money for him. Congrats, Michael Dixon,
big time punter. That's exactly why.
That's right.
You want to keep him around.
Mm-hmm. And when he you know, can't say it on the airwaves here, but when he had that fake punt that he ran for a first down, you know, he got a nice little nickname out of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if everybody remembers that.
All right. So anyways, again, that breaking news from Mark Sanchez and later confirmed by Mike Garofalo. Michael Dixon, 4 year extension with the Seattle Seahawks. Garofalo says it's 4 years, 14.5, 10.6 million in the first 2 years. We talked with Dave Sims earlier about the foreign substance use on baseballs. Because of this news, I'm not going to have time to get to it. I will tell you guys, it was a great interview with Dave. He was wonderful and also had great insight into why some batters may be fine with the use of foreign substances. So you can check that out on the Jake and Stacey podcast in hour three. Jake, we were talking earlier about who's under the most pressure in the NFC West. And this was like a separate conversation we were having off air, because the station had been talking about it. I think Paul was talking about it for a while. It just sparked all kinds of debates. And I was surprised that we disagreed because I said it was Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it is Russell Wilson. I think that the other three quarterbacks in this division have more pressure on them this season. And reason for that being is Rams, it's Super Bowl or bust in terms of the move that they made for Matt Stafford. They in their estimation, think that they're a Matt Stafford away from winning a Super Bowl. Anything less than that is a travesty for them. They gave up the farm. They put themselves in a tremendous hole in terms of their cap, put themselves in a really bad position there. They gave up even more draft capital, two first-round picks. So that has to work out for the Rams. You look at the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray isn't going anywhere, but in terms of the organization, in terms of Kyler Murray having that offense,
yes.
Kyler Murray's play is going to determine whether Cliff Kingsbury has a job or not. You go to the 49ers. Jimmy G's fighting for his job, and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch stuck their neck out there and put themselves potentially on the hot seat if Trey Lance does not succeed over the next year or two. So I believe that their quarterback situations in the division, there's more pressure on that to work out than there is in Seattle and with Russell Wilson. But if you want to flip it to national narrative in terms of legacy, in terms of the microscope that Russell Wilson will be under in terms of this local fan base, I think there's a lot of answers or a lot of questions that he has to answer. And in terms of reestablishing himself as one of the truly looked at and regarded as not just top five quarterback, but arguably one of the best quarterbacks. Right now it's Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, to reestablish himself back into that conversation like he was in 2019 heading into 2020. This is a big year for him that way.
But see, that's exactly why I had him with the most pressure. If Matt Stafford isn't their best player or doesn't take them to a Super Bowl, I don't know that anyone's losing their jobs per se. Like, you're in a really tough division. Matt Stafford is clearly going to be, in my opinion, an upgrade over Goff. I don't know who disagrees. I don't think that's like a hot take. it feels like the stuff that's happening with the other three quarterbacks in the NFC West, all of it has very real implications. And you can certainly make the case like you just did. With Russell Wilson, it feels broader than that, and it feels more connected to legacy, reestablishing yourself as a top quarterback, and less so like, hey, my team is under a lot of pressure and someone might get fired if I don't do this, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, my team traded two first rounders for me, and so I got to make sure I perform. It's more of, if you want to be the best, you're running out of time each year. Each year you don't go to a Super Bowl, you get further and further away from what Tom Brady's been able to do. And if you want to be better than Tom, if you want to be better than anyone to ever do it, that pressure increases every single year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree that it does. I mean, the urgency is at an all-time high. I think that's why you saw Russell Wilson speak a little bit more or be a little bit more vocal about what he thinks about the offense of last year heading into 2020. And you see the second half skid that they had. It was rough, right, for everybody involved, including Russell Wilson. And he has to prove that it's not just going to be the beginning half of the season, that he can sustain that high level of play. I mean, he was on track for 60 touchdowns. I mean, he was putting up unbelievable numbers in the first half of the season. He has to show that he can sustain that for an entire season, that he can win in the toughest division in football, and that this offense led by him can get deeper into the playoffs. I agree. There's a lot on, you know, a lot riding on it for Russell Wilson, but in terms of job security, in terms of all that, I that's why I believe those other situations have way more pressure on them to work out than it does necessarily Russell Wilson here in Seattle, because they have a few more cracks at it than some of these other guys do.
Now, one of my favorite things to do on this show is breaking news. It was one of the things I loved most as a writer, because there's just like adrenaline when you're covering it and you're making sure that everything is right and you're reporting on things and whatever. I also, you know, on air, I have my own sound effect, which I forgot to direct DJ to. DJ, I apologize profusely for that.
Yeah, how did you?
But the Mac and Jack's text line giving me a hard time for that one, and I get where they're coming from now. So I started by saying, breaking news, the Seahawks have agreed. The 253 texts in, Stacy, breaking news, the Seahawks agree to a deal for Pro Bowler Michael Dixon. Yeah, sorry, you guys, I kind of spaced and forgot there's another multi-time Pro Bowler people are keeping an eye out for. So, no, that news was not about Julio Jones. It was an extension for punter Michael Dixon. My bad. I will alter that delivery next time around.
Alter the delivery. My thing is with Michael Dixon, I think your delivery was just fine, but I understand where the texture's coming from. But, Stacey, the interesting thing is that Michael Dixon not only got a payday, he's the second highest paid punter in terms of average average salary per year, just under Johnny Hecker from the Rams. So when you talk about where they value Michael Dixon and what he's meant to the team, obviously they put him in very, very high esteem.
All right. What I need to know is coming your way next. You guys already know how it works, but I'll tell you anyway. You send any question or questions that you want, anything. It can be about sports, not sports. Whatever question you have that we didn't get to today, we're going to turn it over to you guys. Text into the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Your questions, your segment coming your way next in What I Need to Know. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. We're turning it over to you guys. This is your segment, sending in any question you want, stuff we didn't get to, stuff you want to talk about, and basically what you need to know. I have a couple on here. I do want to say, very important, we update. Yesterday, Chris and Enumclaw texted in and said, hey, just so you guys know, I was out of town. The Mariners, what was it? When he was home, the Mariners lost every game. And when he went out of town, they won every game. And then he came back and they lost two.
Yes.
And so we were like, Chris, you need to leave your house and just test the theory. Chris texted back for us and for all the listeners. He said, here's what you need to know. Update. I didn't leave or change where I was staying, and the Mariners won. It clearly wasn't me. They just had a bad 2 days. I'm not a jinx this time. Chris, you know what I'm hearing? You didn't care enough about the Mariners to leave your house.
Not a team
This
player.
Is not a pat on the back moment,
exactly.
Chris. Very
disappointed. We told you what you needed to do
you
for the betterment of the team. and you wanted to wait at least one more game? What was your strategy, Chris? You wanted to see them go another week of losing before you actually left town?
Very simple request that you stay in a hotel or sleep in your car for the team, for the greater good, and you chose to stay home. Like, yeah, the Mariners won still, so it's not you after all, but very disappointing, Chris. Very disappointing.
But I'm glad he didn't have to leave his home. The story is yet to be confirmed in terms of whether he's a jinx or not, but it's a good start, Chris. It's good. It's definitely a good start.
All right. from the 206, any chance the Hawks are in talks for Julio just so other NFC West teams don't get him or to keep Russ happy?
I wouldn't be
not
mad.
Not an either or, but they're saying, like, is it either of these possibilities?
Gotcha. I don't think that they would make a decision just because to keep him away from a team in the NFC West, although I would love it. I would love to do that just out of spite. I would hate to see Julio Jones go to a team within this division, the 49ers or the Rams, and them have great success. That would drive me crazy to no end. But I think that this would be a move that would be in the evaluation of bettering their team. And yeah, it would make your star quarterback pretty happy.
I'm going to throw in some fun ones in between the sports ones. From the 425, what I need to know, cornhole or bocce ball? I fully expect Stacy to have the incorrect answer. Rude. I love both of them. Joke's on you. If I have to choose, though,
yeah, you gotta
this
choose.
Is going to be the wrong answer, isn't it? I know. People are going to get it. It's bocce ball.
Oh,
what's wrong with bocce ball?
There's nothing wrong with bocce ball,
it's
but cornhole
fun,
is definitely
time.
The answer.
No,
cornhole's the answer here.
Cornhole's not the answer because sometimes you don't get any of them in the little things, and then you just have to go pick them all up. It's annoying. Bocce ball, you literally stand there and talk to each other while you just kind of toss things and get. I feel bocce ball is for lazier people, of which I belong
which
to that
fits.
Group.
Got to have precision in cornhole. That's what makes it so fun.
Yes. 253, who would you... Oh, that's a tough one. That's a mean one, and I have an answer, and I don't feel good about it. Who would you prefer, Julio Jones or KJ Wright?
At this stage?
I don't mean to be mean.
I would pick Julio Jones.
It's Julio Jones.
It would be Julio Jones.
No.
I mean, the greater impact is Julio Jones. As of right now, Daryl Taylor is the guy that they feel like can replace KJ Wright. Could he do it as well as KJ Wright? At the linebacker position,
man,
the pure
KJ Wright's so good. He should be paid
as a
right
pure
now.
Linebacker.
Yeah.
I don't think he can replace KJ Wright, but in terms of a pass rusher, in terms of a disruptor for tackles for loss, I think Daryl Taylor has more upside there at this stage. Even though I love KJ, but Julio Jones to me has bigger upside in terms of the potential of how good that signing could be.
Fun question from the 206: what is your favorite donut spot? I don't know. I live very far from this place, but my friend introduced me to it, and now I drive there on special occasions. It's like a 50-minute drive. Chuck's Donuts in Issaquah,
mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. Maple bars are my favorite donut, and they spread the frosting on almost like a cake. Like, you can see the areas where they used a knife to, like, spread. It's phenomenal. The best donuts I've ever had in my entire life.
I think locally, it's tough to find really good donut places. I know there are. Top Pot's been the one that I've gone to the most recently. But my favorite donut spot isn't local. It's Voodoo Donuts down in Portland.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's my ultimate favorite donut spot.
360, bocce ball is vastly superior to cornhole. Stick to your guns, Stacy.
No, it's not.
It is a fun game. It's a good game.
It's
not
a good game.
It.
I'm not saying it's not, but
yeah.
I'm saying if you had to pick between the two of them, it's definitely cornhole.
And then from the 509, bocce ball is for people who eat beans on hot dogs. I agree
with
that.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of who I am. I am who I am. From the 509, what I need to know, what is the best rivalry in sports today? Trae Young versus the Knicks should be fun for years to come.
I feel like this changes all the time. At
That's
some point,
exactly
are we
right.
Going
That's
to,
what makes it fun.
At some point, are we going to just put our flag down and say that this is the best rivalry in sports or the best rivalry in the moment?
It's in the moment. Can you say that when the 49ers were regularly fourth in the division that the Seahawks 49ers was the best rivalry in sports?
No,
no,
of course
but
not.
When they were both at their best in 2013, that game, which is phenomenal, is better because of the rivalry at the time. Like,
very
you can
true.
Still say one of the best that just wasn't for a while after.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I definitely agree with that. But, the comparison here, Trae Young versus versus the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, their fans. Yeah, I mean, that was really fun to watch. It was fun to see the banter back and forth. And, you know, when you have a player that can silence an entire arena, man, that's pretty cool.
Someone, multiple people correcting me that Chuck's Donuts is in Renton. So sorry, not Issaquah. My bad. I love you, Chuck's Donuts, more than many people.
Geography. It's important.
It's really tough.
Renton, Issaquah, not necessarily in the same spot, but how do you get there?
If you think it's in Issaquah, we're done.
Do you end up at Renton?
I don't
Chuck's
know.
Donuts
Maybe that's why it takes me an hour to get there. What way am I going? All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. DJ Wilder on the board. Do not go anywhere because Wyman and Bob is coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.